Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to CrimeWire Investigates, an elite team of veteran and investigation experts, along with noted crime consultants and attorneys, often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crime to find answers and seek justice. The CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private eye and author, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author, and Susan Murphy Milano, expert and author, are there, on the top of the crime, at the top of their game. CrimeWire is the place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call at any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. You can also join our live chat going on right now, or you can email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. If you are a friend or a family member and you'd like to send the CrimeWire team information on an unsolved or suspicious death case, or if you'd like CrimeWire to consider your case for a future show, again, our email address is thecrimewire@gmail.com. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to CrimeWire.
Good evening,
Susan. Good evening, everybody.
Hello.
Hey. We have a new segment every week, which we're going to be doing missing persons cases, and we have Delilah from Imagine Publicity, so she's going to highlight our case of the week.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much from all of the families of missing persons for allowing us to do this. And I just want to say that our next guest, the Harringtons, the nightmare that they've endured when the not knowing seemed endless is being played out every day in other families all across the country. And I'm sure the Harringtons can attest to the strength and hope given to them by determined supporters and other organizations. And right now, there's the same need of support and hope for the family of Mary Frances Marks, who's been missing from East Naples, Florida, since May 30th. Mary, who's 29, is the mother of two children and does not have a history of leaving without notice given to her family. Mary was last seen at the David Lawrence Center, which is the Collier County Community-Based Mental Health Center. She's not made any contact with her family since that day. Her family's very worried that something may have happened to her and is asking the public to please help look for Mary. She's a very vulnerable person. She's been without her medications, which can cause very wide mood swings, and she might even be somewhat catatonic and not able to speak. The family worries also that she may have been befriended by someone in the drug or sex industry and that her emotional state, she'd be quite vulnerable. Mary can be very caring and compassionate, as well as extremely agitated if given alcohol. She's 5'8" and 135 pounds. If you have any information about Mary Frances Marks, please contact Collier County Sheriff's Office at 239-252-9300, or if you want to remain anonymous, call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-780-8477. On a previous show, we had as a guest Jan Smolinski, who explained all about what the Help Find the Missing Act, or Billy's Law, will do for families of the missing and the importance of getting it passed into law. This law will present incentives to law enforcement agencies across the country for training on how to properly report a missing persons case in a timely manner, as well as funding for NamUs, a database which is able to be used by the public and will allow matches to be made with over 40,000 unidentified remains. This is a one-shot deal, and if this fails to pass, the opportunity is lost. We only have the rest of the month of July to get really needed co-sponsors for the bill. The Help Find the Missing Act, the bill number is S3019, is now in the Senate, and it must go through the regular channels instead of being expedited like it was through the House of Representatives, who passed it unanimously. The urgent need is for everyone to contact all the senators on the Senate Judiciary Committee and the senators of each home state for their support and co-sponsorship. For all the latest updates and information about Billy's Law, go to Peace for the Missing. Their website is peace4missing.ning.com, where you'll find all of the email addresses and information for senators, as well as sample letters to send. All you have to do is copy and paste, email, fax, or make a phone call. It couldn't be easier, and it would make a huge difference for all families of missing and unidentified persons.
Thank you so much, Delilah.
Thank you. Bye.
Hey, Delilah, it's interesting, that case you just mentioned in Naples.
Yes.
About that individual. It's very interesting, because up to a couple years ago, we had a home there for 9 years. So I'm very familiar with the area, the police department. It's a very low crime area, thank God, and
mm-hmm.
they have a very good police department there. So hopefully this individual is going to be found, and it's not anything of foul play, or who knows, you know, what else could it be. But just because of the low crime, and you're probably about 25 minutes away from Fort Myers, which does have some crime. But, you know, hopefully that this case can come to a good close, and we wait with anticipation for your for you to tell us that, you know.
I'll be keeping an eye on it.
Okay. Listen,
thanks,
before
Peter.
before we start our cases, I just wanted to take about 2 or 3 minutes just to touch on this Mel Gibson fiasco. And I guess that's the best way to sum it up. A couple of the new lines that were caught on tape that he just said to his ex-girlfriend not too long ago was, he said, you know, when she told him that he needed medication, he says, "I don't need medication. You need a effing king bat, effing bat in the side of your head." And he ends the tape by saying, "Don't threaten me. I'll put you in an effing rose garden. You understand that? Because I'm capable of it. You understand that?" And, you know, a lot of times people think, well, somebody's drunk or they're just shooting off steam. But when people say these kind of things, and I've read these cases, I've seen the autopsy pictures, I've seen all the different things, this is when these people are the most serious. And we need to understand that this isn't just blowing off steam and it's a boyfriend-girlfriend thing. So maybe Delilah or Denny, if you'd like to just say something on it, your comments. But I think the public needs to understand this guy is really off the deep end right now.
But he always has been off the deep end.
Well, yeah, for quite a while. But it's now it's coming, really coming out there, you know what I mean?
And, he's gone from making anti-Semitic remarks to now, you know, you could see that there was anger. You could see, by the way, that he literally dumped his wife for many years. What, they have 10 or 11 children, and then goes to this younger, without any, you know, thought process to the family. He's supposed to be a good Christian man. And you know, it's the sheep and wolf clothing, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Ben?
You know,
Denny?
Yes, My thoughts were, I've seen some speculation on various message boards and chat rooms that, well, you know, he's an actor and he's in a court battle and he's just trying to intimidate her. I didn't get that sense at all. I sensed he was very serious, and I actually found it chilling. I mean, I don't think this was a game that he was playing. I think it's I think the guy needs some help or something. I think it's the real deal.
Yeah,
I did too.
Definitely. We have to, you know, people need to know this isn't that great actor that you watched and that you adore. This is a man that has a very vast evil side to him.
Well, look at Charlie Sheen. Look at, you know, Chris Brown. Look at all these people that we hold out. Phil Spector. And all of these people put a lot of money on people's dinner tables and line their bank accounts, don't they?
That's right.
A lot of them do. And that's what we forget, because they're on the screen, like you said.
Well, you know, the people listening, the people that are on the blog, send us your comments about that. Let us know what you think about this individual and this whole situation that he's in. But right now, I don't know if he's on the line, Susan, yet. Is Peter Hyatt on the line?
No, he's not. But we do have a couple of callers with some questions, so we should probably begin the first segment.
Okay. You want me to go to the first segment here?
Yes, please.
Okay. It's the Morgan Harrington case. I'll read this quickly here. October 17, 2009. Morgan attended a Metallica concert at the John Paul Arena. on January 26, 2010, with the at Anchorage Farm, Virginia. The person or persons responsible are still at large, presumably still in the Charlottesville area. Morgan's remains were left as though she was discarded. I could talk about the person responsible for murdering Morgan, but law enforcement has yet to apprehend her killer. There may not be an arrest as of yet for murder for this murdering hijacker of life, but I do know one thing for certain. This individual is still breathing, living, talking, and walking free. Joining us this evening are the parents of Morgan Harrington. That's Dr. and Mrs. Harrington. Welcome to CrimeWire.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You know, I work so many of these cases, Dr. and Mrs. Harrington, that I know when I'm sitting in my office an arm's length away from the mother or the father, it's difficult a lot of times because there's nothing you can say to them to ease their pain. And that's a difficult thing in life when you can't do anything. You could try your best as an investigator and just try to do whatever you can. But, I mean, all we could tell you is we're glad we're featuring this case. I talked about this case numerous times on TV a few years ago when it first happened. And before I turn it over to you, I want to ask you one question and make sure that this was right information at the time. When we were talking about this case a few years ago, was it true that she had stepped outside from the theater to either use her phone or a cigarette and then they refused to let her back in? Is that part true?
Well, the circumstances are really unclear. She left her friends inside the arena at the John Paul Jones Arena and went to the restroom and for whatever reasons left the building. At that point in time, she was unable to be allowed back in because of the policy at the arena. She never made a call or a text on her telephone. After she left the building, she received one phone call from her friend inside the building, and Morgan at that point told her friend that she would find a ride home. Of course, Morgan's in Charlottesville. She goes to school in Blacksburg, Virginia, which is about 3 hours away, so none of this really made sense.
I mean, because the first notes of this concert were going on, that was their policy, not to let this lady back in, this girl back in, who could still be with us now. Am I correct?
That's correct.
That's a sorry thing to have to understand. What is the new developments on this case that are going on? What is new over the last couple of months?
Well, the big news since we actually talked 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, I guess, was a release right before the 4th of July of news that Morgan's case had been linked with a forensically with a case in Fairfax, Virginia, which is about 2 hours from Charlottesville. There was also that case where there was the forensic evidence was from 2005, and the woman was abducted, beaten, and raped. Fortunately, was not killed. And there was a sketch photo that was made at that time. And so that was released to the public on, I think it's the 2nd of July.
Dr. Harrington, talk about, she was hurt, wasn't she? Wasn't your daughter hurt? Didn't somebody say she was hurt when she went outside the arena?
Well, what we know is that when Morgan left her friends and went to the restroom, there are reports that she apparently fell and was bleeding from a cut on her face, and she subsequently left the arena again for unknown reasons and left by doors that would not normally be used for people to leave. And you know, despite her having an injury, there was no one really paying attention to that issue when she attempted to get back in the building.
But immediately after she leaves the arena, when she doesn't, you don't know where she's at. Is there somebody that sees, do they look outside the arena for maybe some blood or something that might have identified something to her that went to her at all?
There was really no a report of blood inside the arena or even outside the arena, but there was reports that she was bleeding from the face.
And the person that saw her that was bleeding from the face, were this her friends or was it just strangers saying
we saw this?
These are strangers. Okay.
These are strangers who reported that. There were multiple people who saw Morgan after she left the arena and subsequently was seen across several parking lots and was seen on a bridge. And that's the last report of Morgan being seen.
Doctor, now that a little amount of time has gone by, how does you and your wife feel about the police solving this case? Are you optimistic at this point?
Well, I think we are. I think we have felt pleased with the progress that the police have made, and certainly with the release of the information, the forensic information and the sketch, you know, almost 2 weeks ago. There have been numerous tips that have been called into the Virginia State Police. So we, you know, we're hopeful. You know, it's now been 9 months, and it, you know, it's difficult. You know, time doesn't seem to ease the pain.
Right. Well, I know I can say from being an ex-cop and a private detective now that does a lot of these type of cases. Once they feel they may have a possible suspect, they're going to know every single thing about this individual. I can guarantee you that. They're going to know what time this guy eats, what he does, who his best friends are, who's his former girlfriend that he may have hit or beaten up sometimes. So, you know, you don't want to lose the case. As a cop, a lot of times the public says, well, I don't understand. Why can't they make an arrest? Because the worst thing that can happen is to arrest somebody and then they are acquitted. From the case not being so strong. So at least I feel a little more optimistic about this case now than a year ago when it was on TV.
What about cameras outside the arena? Were there any outside or in?
It's our understanding that most of the cameras at the arena are live feed. So they're more like to control, you know, real time.
So they're really kind of a false sense of security in a way, you know, for people that you would think that was there for people's protection if somebody gets robbed, something like this happens, and it really isn't up there to really capture anything that might go wrong outside the building for safety reasons.
It's not recoverable because, again, it's my understanding that most of that is live feed. I mean, there's also camera on a street light that's near where she is believed to have been picked up, and that camera also works on a basis of live feed.
Can we take a phone call? Area code 540, you're on the air. Welcome to CrimeWire. What's your question, please? 343.
343. This is Jamie Waldrop. I'm one of the administrators on the board of Morgan's Forum. I'm just absolutely shocked that they would let anyone out of this building bleeding from the face, possibly with a concussion. Was there no rescue personnel there paying attention to Morgan at all? Does anyone know? Was there anyone with a rescue squad there called? Even were they called?
Well, it's really unclear, Jamie. It's really unclear to us, you know, the circumstances inside the arena, and we don't know the details of any of that, and have not pursued that at this point in time.
Jeannie, I'm going to have to let you go because we have more questions and people. So thank you very much for calling in. Area code 916773. You're on the air. What's your question, please? Area code 916. No?
Oh, that's me, but I didn't ask a question.
Sorry, okay, well, that's okay. That's all right. So I'm sorry. So then what about where her body was discovered? Can you describe the area for people? Maybe, you know, and Vito, you always say this, and so do you, Denny. Somebody saw something.
Yeah.
Describe where this old farm was and what is the area like? The difficulty of even getting out there and not even, you know, and going out that far, please.
Yeah, where Morgan's body was left is very remote. It's not just like on the side of the road in the beginning of the farm. It's really internal. It's not accessible by car, you'd really need an all-terrain vehicle or a four-wheel drive vehicle, which leads me to think that it took more than one person to get her there, which is good because secrets are hard for two people to keep. But it also narrows down the list of possible people who would have taken and left her body there, because it had to be someone with prior knowledge of this of the farm. You wouldn't just, and it also leads me to believe that this was the person seized an opportunity because he intersected with Morgan, but he had a plan in mind if opportunity came his way where he would dispose of a body. He's done bad things before. He attempted to, he hurt and attempted to murder another woman, and he's still there. You know, that's, we are getting more frantic as time goes on.
You know what I don't understand on this case, being involved, going to a lot of concerts and working security for different named artists. Here you have a very, very popular band, Metallica, not one of my liking, but that doesn't matter. That has a tremendous following, so I'm sure it probably was a packed house. But most of these venues would have officers or security guards patrolling, especially the door area, because you have so many people there, so many kids, and you know some of them go to these concerts and they're up to no good. They know they can sell some drugs there, see their friends, whatever. And I mean, so far you got a girl that's locked out just because she stepped outside. You have basically maybe no video, nothing. You have no report of cops that can watch the activities, especially of a girl who's bleeding outside. So I mean, there's error after error already at this location, and it's horrible to say that, but I've worked many of these major arenas for concerts, and you know, this is unbelievable.
Vito,
get stuck in that, because that girl didn't have one speck of luck that night. But it statistically, things have got to turn. We need some luck now and find this man and get him off the streets.
I think I'm remembering from doing some stuff on TV. Wasn't she the one that was very excited about the concert? She had the tickets or something up on your refrigerator for a long time, and she was looking for it. Am I correct with that?
That's right.
Correct.
Yeah, I remember that from television, right.
Yeah, Jenny, can I'd like to make a couple of comments, I guess, or maybe ask a question. Vito, I just mentioned that he had worked security at venues such as this, and I remember several years ago now, I worked a U2 concert in Las Vegas as security, and I remember when all the security personnel for that were hired as a special event, when we were briefed, there was no uncertain terms, we were told, one of your chief priorities is we want you to observe for anyone that appears to be somehow disoriented, injured, whatever, we want to know about that. If anybody needs help, we don't want them wandering around this facility and be ignored. So that we were told that was one of our priorities, to look for anybody. And obviously it was not only getting people help, but also, I assume, a liability issue. And it's just hard to believe, as Vito said, for a band like Metallica and the number of security personnel you would think, including probably plain clothes, undercover types, that a girl could be wandering around there bleeding and not be taken care of. That just boggles my mind. Is there a logical explanation for that? Or no?
I think there's no logical explanation. And as Jill just said, Morgan had no luck that night. I mean, there were multiple places that there could have been an intervention, and nothing really intervened to stop.
But she went, Dr. Harrington, she went with five girls, correct? Five other girls for the concert?
No, she went with two girls and a boy, and they went in Morgan's car, and Morgan was not the driver. So Morgan's
that kind
car
of odd?
Was there. No, I think they had one of the people as a designated driver. And
okay.
You know, and the one of her friends did call her when she didn't return to her seat. And again, they went actually looking for Morgan inside the arena. They did not go outside the arena. It's difficult really to explain. The girls, I think, are devastated themselves, and you know, this is, you know, there's collateral damage in cases like this. You know, it's not only the family, but the friends also, I think, have suffered.
Yeah, that's true. I'd like to say one thing that, and I do not know Metallica's music either, but they have been fabulous. They had the first missing poster out there before we could get one together. They had it out there and were circulating it online and on their fan clubs and their website. You know, they call Dan, you know, as fathers.
How much time had elapsed between the time that Morgan didn't come to her seat and they reported something was wrong because of the car at the parking lot after the concert? How much time between maybe when somebody last saw Morgan and then when they realized she wasn't coming back to her seat? Does anybody know how much time elapsed?
Well, I reported Morgan missing the next day. We were not called by the girls because they felt like Morgan knew what she was doing. And so when Morgan didn't come home, I called the girls, and they told me that Morgan was missing. Prior to that, I had received a call from the University of Virginia, who one of the lacrosse players had found Morgan's purse next to an athletic field and had reported it as, you know, as lost and found. And so at that point in time, I thought, well, Morgan just lost her purse, you know, didn't think a whole lot about it until about an hour and a half later when we realized that Morgan had missed her coming home time, and we found from the girls, and I called the university and told them that Morgan was missing. So the time lapse is probably about 18 to 19 hours.
I don't know that it would have made a difference. She very likely was dead the night of the concert.
Well, you know, Harrington's, not to get too biblical on you, but says right in the Bible, something that is hidden in the dark will be brought out into the light, and that's what we need. We need something to be brought out in the light in this case, whether it's that individual that the police are looking at or somebody else, because we've said it, Denny has said it, Susan, we all, from our background, we know this stuff. There are people out there that are not involved in the crime, but yet know who did this.
Yeah,
and
people, you don't exist in a vacuum. Someone
right.
is, knows this man, and mm-hmm. I believe it's more than one person. And I don't think that they like how he's upped his game, and so it's time to come forward.
I think it's also important to point out that we have a $150,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of this individual, and $50,000 of that $150,000 is from Metallica.
That is great that they did that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, they were really. We are just days away from 9 months on the 17th when Morgan was abducted and murdered. You know, it took 9 months to make all the composite pieces to create a life. I'm hoping that 9 months that it's taken for us to create a composite of this murderer is adequate time, and that the community can deliver the murderer and we can get him off the street. It's too late for my child. She is dead. But I can't give up on the next girl yet. That is what we are motivated for. We're not about finding punishment. Punishment is not ours to give. But we want safety for other young women.
Well, you know, a lot of times that's what happens at the end of these type of cases. They can't bring your daughter back. I remember very well when I was involved with the case, the missing honeymooner George Smith that disappeared the Royal Caribbean cruise. They couldn't find him or bring him back, but because of the parents' work and effort, new laws and bills were passed in Congress that changed how cruise lines handled everything of this nature, how they reported things, how they investigated things. So a lot of good came out of that unfortunate death. So a lot of times that happens in these cases.
And you've got a website, findmorgan.com. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Can I ask you guys a question? That it's something that I'm trying to become educated on. It seems so strange to me that the way that DNA evidence is handled, it is not, you would think that there'd be national policy and it would be handled the same everywhere, but it's becoming more apparent to me that, you know, rights of the individual in different states, that it really is a hodgepodge how things are processed from one county to another, one state to another. It is bewildering to me that that is 2010, how we do business with evidence.
Well, you know, it happens differently, like you just said, in all the different states. Connecticut just solved a big murder by constantly every other week going to the Connecticut DNA database until finally somebody in Connecticut, a lot of times once anybody that goes to jail or is arrested on a big case, they give their DNA. So the police kept going back to the database to see, because they had DNA at the crime scene but nothing to match it to. And then finally, after dedicated work and keep going back to the register, and they finally found a match and they were able to solve a murder case. So, I mean, that's the whole key. Now, if they're keying on this suspect, if this is possibly the individual, then either from his arrest before or any arrest before, but even if not, him walking down the street, throwing a cigarette away, coffee cup sitting behind him on a train, and retrieving a strand of hair from his hat or anything of that nature that he has off. So, you know, they'll do whatever they have to get some DNA from this individual.
If they can find him, see?
Afraid if they can find him, of course.
We're waiting for him rather than finding him.
Well,
and,
you know,
we
before
wait
we...
wait for him because he does something else bad.
Yeah, no, that we don't want. Definitely don't want that. But before we wind up this segment, is there anything else that you folks as father and mother would like the public to know?
I think we would like to again repeat that there is a substantial reward in this case for information, and we again want to reiterate that the area in Charlottesville we feel remains an unsafe area due to the fact that there is an individual somewhere between Fairfax and Charlottesville who remains free.
Mm. Susan, you want to give the website and the Virginia State Police?
It's findmorgan.com, and the information of, I don't have the police number in front of me.
The Virginia State Police tip line, 434-352-3467, and everybody needs to remember that all tips remain confidential. They want to solve this crime, and so do we.
And like Mr. Harrington said, from these other counties as well, there's a radius, there's a mile, you know, a lot of miles there that this person could be at. And
right.
You know, maybe you just went to church with them, or maybe somebody served you coffee. And we all have to pay attention. We all have to pay attention and do what we can to put up the posters that the police have just issued and to get the word out that this man is out in the community and he's going to kill again.
Right. He's hiding in plain sight.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much, folks, and may God bless both of you and your entire family.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Thank you. Okay. Denny, are other segments on?
Yes. Our next segment is going to be the third in our medical examiner issue cases from Oklahoma, from the state of Oklahoma. And I'll give a little background on tonight's case before I introduce the guest. Sheila Deviney, age 30, was set on fire and burned alive in her trailer home south of Mayersville, Oklahoma, in the early morning hours of Tuesday, January 6, 2004. For the 2 years prior, Sheila lived next door to her parents with her two children, ages 7 and 9. She lived the quiet life of a college student and had graduated 3 weeks prior to her death from Murray State College with an associate's degree in education. The father of her children, Tyson Hendricks, had been married to Sheila from 1993 to 1998. During their marriage, Tyson was alleged to have been physically, mentally, and sexually abusive toward her and the children. A contentious relationship had developed between the two following the divorce. Tyson was in arrears for approximately $20,000 of back child support and related costs. In September 2003, during efforts to collect past child support, Sheila applied for and was granted permanent custody of the two children and was able to freeze certain valuable tax assets of Tyson Hendricks. Sheila was also granted a substantial increase in monthly child support, which endangers Tyson's employment at a preeminent oil company in Oklahoma, which had strict moral turpitude rules against employees' salaries being garnished. Tyson was so outraged by this legal development that he threatened Sheila verbally via telephone that if she did not drop the money issue, he would return to Maysville and burn her out, stating that no one will know the difference. And to discuss the case further, I'd like to welcome Shane and Kyle, and I believe we have one of the Devaney family, perhaps Susan, with us also.
Yes, we're here.
Hey,
actually
welcome.
Devaney.
Yes.
Sheila, it's Sheila Devaney and her mother, Susan Devaney, is here
yep.
with us.
Hi. I want to thank you all for this program. I don't know if you know how much it means to people that have had these violent crimes committed against them. I think you all are doing a great service, and your producers and everyone, you've done a fantastic job of describing just exactly how we all feel.
Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't you two then carry us through now? We've gotten up to let the listeners know a little of the background. Whoever wants to go first, why don't you go ahead and fill us in on the rest of the details of what was going on between
I think Shane's his bridge last week, the week before, and then today, because that's why this is important. This is a three-parter in this series.
Okay. Well, as you said, it's the third case in Garvin County, Oklahoma, small area. These three cases are actually separated by 15 miles in a triangle. You heard 2 weeks ago about Shanda Turner from Elmore City, Oklahoma. She was shot to death. Found dragged out of her house into her front yard, and then you heard last week about a retired teacher shot to death in his house in 2008. Those cases are very similar. Same staff members work both calls, same cover-up accusations, the same kind of thing. This case, Sheila Devaney case, happened in 2004, right in between the two of them, and it's kind of the most outrageous because she was actually set up on and burnt while she was alive. And on top of that, what the Devaneys have that the other two families don't have is that they have two documents that say that it was a homicide. They have an amended report by the state fire marshal in Oklahoma that says the cause and manner of the fire was arson, and therefore the death was a homicide. And they have a report amended from the state medical examiner's office that was ultimately released 9 months later, finally, that says the cause and manner of the death was a homicide because accelerants were found on the body, and there were three separate fires started in the dwelling at three separate locations at three separate times. They have these two documents that say this. They ultimately got a grand jury in Garvin County in 2006, and the grand jury said, yes, this is a homicide. They just couldn't come up with any suspects, and now three different pieces of paper say it's a homicide, and no one's working it. It's grown cold. So Susan Devaney herself here, she's a retired teacher, and she has a lot to say. Her and David have meticulously collected materials to the ceiling about this thing, and it's very solvable, I'll tell you that.
Can we go back real quick as the domestic violence expert? I mean, this was troubling. I looked all over the place. I only found one article from the grand jury. And then the facts of she was divorced, the way that she was killed, dropped the kids off at school. A lot of times these abusers don't hurt the person, you know, or the children, and they hurt the person that they're angry with. He was back child support. She was probably going to take him to court. Describe, because I haven't been able to find this, Susan, what the person, your former son-in-law, is like.
He is a football player. He went to college on a football scholarship. Full ride.
What kind of person was he? Is he involved with the kids now? Are the kids with him? Are they with another relative?
The kids, he came and took the kids within a week after her death, and we were led to believe that they would get to stay here with us till spring break to give them the time to adjust. They went to school 2 days after their mother's funeral, and he checked them out and moved them into a new home and a new town.
Any contact with them since this has happened?
He let us see them about every other weekend until it was deemed a homicide, and then once it was deemed a homicide, he cut all visits, you know, all telephone calls, everything. He wouldn't allow the children to see us at all.
Denny, is this more than the medical examiner screwing this up? Isn't it the police not investigating and the prosecutor there?
It sounds like the whole ball of wax here. I don't have enough fingers to point to every place I think they should be pointed at here. I mean, there's it looks to me like just a mess, and more than one agency or entities can be criticized.
Well, and the thing that how we got in contact with Sam and Kyle was when I saw the grand jury was coming up, they tried to kill my grand jury, and they told me that all these signatures weren't valid. And so I sought Shannon out. I got a hold of his ex-aunt, and she gave me his phone number. And I called, and I said, Shannon, you need to know that do not keep this petition until the very last day because they're going to tell you there's something wrong with the signatures, and they're going to try to kill it.
How many other cases were like this? Didn't you have another case last week? They wouldn't let the signatures come into the case to change the medical examiner's initial certificate?
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's been three grand juries called in this county in the last 10 years, all with the same sitting district judge, same attorney, same district attorney's staff. It's been the same statute from the same constitution in the same state. The first two took 500 signatures. The last one, they made us get three times that. We ended up having to get six times that to convince them that three times was enough. We went to the Supreme Court twice. Sheila warned us. They did the same thing to her. She showed up with 500 or 600. They made her go back get 600 or 700 more. They pulled every hoop they could to try to get it to not occur.
Susan, is your daughter's case on a database unsolved cases? Because again, it doesn't look like it exists. It took a long time, everybody, for me to find out, and it was on websleuths.com, that it was somebody that went to school with your daughter who put the information in, said she didn't know what happened to her in 2004, but nobody knew anything, and one of the people at WebSleuths found this article. But that was it.
Yeah, that's it. The OSBI has buried it. It's like it never existed. And now, every year, they only can keep your remains in the medical examiner's office for 5 years. They still have part of her body tissues there. Every year we have to call back and get that renewed. Well, they're threatening now that if there's no movement on this homicide case, they will do away with her remains. And they already have messed up the investigation by withholding her autopsy for 9 months. They knew at 8:15 the next morning she didn't have enough smoke in her lungs to have killed her.
What about the lawyer that's there now that's done these Supreme Court cases for you? Can't they go in there and put some kind of an injunction there?
Yeah, we're working with Jay. She's been on vacation. But she said that she would do the paperwork to try to get it. We may have to store them ourselves. But with the forensics right now, I feel like they need to be protected because if there is a break in this, there may be a lot more research and data than things that they could do with it they couldn't do 6 years ago.
Let me ask you a question. Are you in the position now that unfortunately other relatives of victims find themselves in, that the police agencies with jurisdiction are not actively working the cases, and they will only reactivate the investigation upon receipt of new and credible information, and it basically is up to you to do your own investigation to provide that starter
for
them?
That's exactly the case, but the crux of that argument is that the very attempt to bring that information out is automatically labeled as, we're being flaky, we're being wannabes, we're screwing up the system.
But they're threatening your life. Last week on the show you said, and we suggested that you make a video, these yahoos who wear badges and are sworn into office are threatening you. You're being threatened for doing something and trying to get some resolve in people whose lives are lost and that are tragically miscategorized, once again, because wasn't the sheriff, Susan, on this case and Shannon on also Chandra's case, the same sheriff?
He's the acting sheriff now, but he has been in that agency for 11 years now. And basically the DA before the grand jury that Shannon petitioned shut down, they called us and they asked us, they said, do you have any new evidence that you can bring to your case if we hear it in the grand jury? And we said, well, what do you want? What what do you need, basically? And
for the crime, Vito, jump in here. The crime, you know, the putting together the forensics on the husband with what happened. Where the hell was he that day? I mean, you can speak to this better than I can.
Yeah, well,
I missed that part. He pulled up and never got out of his car. I watched him pull up, and I said, "What's the Garvin County Sheriff doing here?" And everybody said, "Well, if she died, you know, he's got to check it out." I'm not sure he even went in the house.
Well, you see, that's why, you know, Denny gave a correct answer before about as time goes by on these cases, it's kind of like, well, you bring us something and we'll continue the investigation, especially after this amount of years. The problem, though, is when it's screwed up from the beginning, like this case appears to be, you just mentioned about pulling up and, and nobody not even going in the house and all that kind of stuff, all these things that were done wrong at the beginning. Time goes by, and I've said this many times on TV shows, what happens, people think that the cops are going to work on this case forever. Those 10 people that started out when the crime happened, it's cut to 5, then it's cut to 2, then it's what it is now is they got one person that follows up on leads while they're out doing the burglary cases and other things like that. Only problem is if they didn't screw up from the beginning, and Oklahoma has a very bad track record on these kind of cases. They don't have a good what's called closure on their cases out there of this nature. And then they point at the individual and say, well, you know, go hire investigators, pay them thousands of dollars, and go do this and go do that, and then bring us something, and maybe we'll take a look at it. And
Susan, but what about an order of protection, though? Did your daughter have an order of protection at all against the person she was married to, ever?
She had a permanent protective order, and when they did meet to deliver the kids for their visitation, she always met at a public place.
That's a bingo right there.
She was scared of him, and they were supposed to go to court the day before. She went to court on the 5th, and nobody told them it was postponed. They got over there, the lawyers called her and told her that it was postponed, and then she was dead the very next day.
How many times did they question him? Do you know?
I think twice, and many of the interviews that the OSBI agent did were over the telephone.
Over the telephone?
Over the telephone, because when we hired our investigator, I've got tapes in here, and our investigator taped all of the interviews with the people that we wanted, and it was brought out in there that they were questioned over the telephone.
Well, that's totally ridiculous. I mean, I learned many years ago in school, the whole idea is to have that person in front of you so you could see their actions, you could see their nervous things. You ask them a question and their hand goes up to their mouth nervously, the way they move, things like that. You cannot do that over a phone call. And again, goes back to what I said, you know, if you start out doing these cases wrong, you can't play catch up. You can't open up a book and say, okay, Murder Investigations 101, and read from it, and it's terrible.
But would it help for the family to get the Freedom of Information Act, or would there be nothing there on all the case reports? Go to the Attorney General's office. Is that something, Vito, that maybe they'd be able to do?
You have to do that. If anybody saw the news today, they saw that 6 cops in New Orleans were just indicted for a murder. Okay, 4 of them, and their 2 bosses who tried to cover it up by telling them what to do, what to say, how to act, okay? But the only thing was family and other people kept pounding away. This is a case that goes back to Katrina, so that's a while ago now. But it's the same thing with this. The police aren't giving you any cooperation now. Again, I've said this on shows, you got to get that investigative reporter, maybe from the county someplace, that's not afraid to take a stand. You mentioned investigator before. Somebody that's able to dig in. Unfortunately, you got to make a lot of waves nowadays. It's terrible that people have to do that. You got to make a lot of noise, and they're going to get mad at you, but what's the difference? They don't like you now as it is.
And can I suggest that you have a separate website for with your daughter's name .com if you don't have one already, because I didn't find one.
No, I don't have one.
You need to do that. You need to do that right away, because, like I said, for people that are going to come on and help you, even the Internet Web Sleuth or help find the missing.org, these other organizations that spread the news, to have a .com, I think it's $10 through Gmail. If you want, I'll ask Delilah from Imagine Publicity, why don't we do this? Let me have, because she does all these cases and puts them together, if it's okay with you, let me have her get a hold of you to so that the ball can get rolling, and then you would, of course, take it on after that, but to get it set up correctly. And I think, Shannon, all these cases need this. They need their own separate, because they're separate cases. They were separate murder victims. Instead of, you know, lumping them together, this way you could, as you work each one, put different information there, and the families can work the websites.
I wanted to bring out the fact, too, that the OSBI agent did ask Tyson to take two polygraphs, and he declined. And also, we would be in exactly the same situation as the Hortons and the Turners, but my husband called weekly to the medical examiner, the fire marshal, and the OSBI agent and told them that it wasn't an accident. And they kept saying every week, it's an accident, it's an accident. They called him a persistent SOB because every week they expected his call. In fact, the medical examiner gave us a call Sunday night. He still had my husband's cell phone number in his phone while we were working on this, the one that investigated all three of these cases.
Wow.
Let me just raise a question. It's something I run into, and I don't know if you have in your situation or not, but police agencies very legitimately can fight FOIA requests and so forth when they have an open case. Okay, they can say that we have an open investigation or open case. We can't release certain information, FOIA request or no FOIA request. And there are probably 98% of the time or something that's legitimate. However, that very same argument can be made when the case is inactive and they're doing nothing with it, but they just don't want to release their information. And I'm going through that now with something else. They're carrying the case, even though it hasn't been worked in over 2 years, they are carrying the case as open but inactive, and every request for information from the family is denied. Whether it's a personal request, a written request, a FOIA request, it doesn't matter. They are not going to release the information because the case is technically an open case.
So, Denny, can we start putting that stuff on the CrimeWire site, on our blog, and start listing when this happens? Is that something that would help?
Yeah, it's a major problem. And like I say, the majority of the time, I'm sure there's legitimate reasons. I'm not criticizing the practice in general, but it also can serve if the investigation perhaps has been botched or been less than enthusiastically done. And they throw the ball in the family's court to do their own investigation, and then they turn around on the other side and say, but we're not going to help you either. I mean, it's all up to you because we're not going to share any information with you, who we interviewed, what information we checked. So they're not going to tell you anything, and you're totally on your own to do it all.
I think that we should ask Web Sleuths to post the case as well.
Absolutely.
I'll give you another catch-22 that we've been running into. Susan said this earlier. I thought it would be a good soundbite for you guys. She said, in the aftermath of this whole Joyce Gilchrist scandal going back for the last 15 years, that was so damaging to the credibility of Oklahoma that forever after, every death is an accident or a suicide because it can't be anything else because it's too complicated for them to engage. They don't want to incur any liability because they're so damaged. So, for instance, in two of these grand juries, we had a finite amount of expert testimony that we could seek. But the authorities told us, well, if you pay them to testify privately, we won't be able to use them to testify for the state. So we went with a second-tier person, got the answer that we thought would be the first-tier person then for the state, debunk that thing, and, you know, it's you can't win for losing. It's a catch-22.
Yeah, and there's a lot, and, you know, fortunately, most of us don't have to go through these things. I mean, when you look at the overall population, it's a very small percentage of people who find themselves in this situation. But it's just maddening, and a lot of people, when I tell people some of this stuff, they don't believe me. I mean, they think, oh, come on, this is the United States. This is America. What do you mean? And it's really scary that this kind of thing goes on as frequently as it does. It shouldn't happen at all. And it just drives me insane virtually. I get so frustrated. And they, you know, somebody in the chat room just says, victimized over and over again. You get victimized by the crime and then victimized by the system. And
yeah. Here's the cherry on top, guys. In Oklahoma this year, it is an election year. The attorney general is running to be the governor. The current lieutenant governor is running to be the governor. Several people are running to be attorney general and this and that. Nobody wants to do anything for fear that it will endanger their platform. So we're left out in the cold until that occurs.
And so are more families and more of these victims. I'm sure there's a lot more that nobody knows about.
We know of dozens.
There's a lot that are afraid to speak up. I've had people come to me and say, I can't believe you're doing that. I admire you for doing that. This happened to me, but I'm too afraid. I can't do what you're doing. It's like we have terrorism in America and nobody cares. Nobody wants to stop it.
That's a good point. I think we were all talking about the CrimeWire team of doing a special, weren't we, Denny, on coming up on a Sunday night, just devoted. I think we need 2 hours for this.
It wouldn't hurt. We got a lot of people who want to talk on the issue, and I think what we were thinking, in fact, I've already talked to touch base with Shannon on this, that we want to get, and because each jurisdiction is different and so forth, but get some ideas out there, and not necessarily specific cases, but the general problem, and maybe some strategies that people in their own locale can use to try to combat or try to fight the system and get some answers.
And then take the show. And then take the show that we do, guys, and like wildfire, because it's on a widget. It's on a transferable platform where you all can take it and get it out there. Send it to the media.
I want to help people. I don't want anybody to have to go through what we have to go through. This is awful.
Yes, it is. It is. And this is how my own mother died. And you know, and we're going to help you. Yeah.
We can have a regular show, Susan, just on Oklahoma cases.
But to really pin it and get some fire under people, and Susan, when we get off the show, not tonight but tomorrow, you know, there's some things possibly that. With some connections, because this is all I do out of the three of us. And I'm younger and I have more energy than Denny and Vito most of the time. So,
hey.
I mean that in a good way. But I can go ahead and facilitate a couple things just to get the ball rolling, aside from what you sent us, which was amazing. But you all need separate sites. You all need to – we just can't do these shows, Denny and Vito, unless it's not a one-shot deal, which is what it is when we're on a show like tonight. You got to carry the show till the next week. You've got to move it along and make everybody pay attention and listen to the show and say, what are you going to do? How are you going to help? And same thing with the Harringtons that were on earlier. But the people that heard this, these are people's families. These are not stories, people. These are people's lives, and that's the difference.
And we are stirring the pot, though. We know that. We are stirring the pot.
We are.
And, you know, after the last 3 weeks, we know one thing. Oklahoma is not okay, if you get me.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have a lot more than what we sent you. You just don't have any idea.
Well, don't be sending that to me. I'll ask you for specific things, please. And I'm more interested in the profile of the person to whom she was married and that type of information. And we'll exchange some things. As soon as Delilah gets a hold of you, because we have your email address, and we'll go that route first. And then I'm more interested in building a picture of him, because that's how I work it, on intimate partner homicides, because that's what this is.
Well, I'm very excited about the special, whether it's an hour or 2 hours, whatever. But, you know, this is an issue that definitely needs to be out there, and the more people, the more exposure it gets, the better off families like the Oklahoma, I'm going to call them the Oklahoma families, are going to be, and all of us will be, because even if we're fortunate enough not to have to be involved personally in these situations, our friends, neighbors, relatives are, and it's a problem area that needs to be addressed and corrected. And if we can do anything to help that along, I think it's very worthwhile.
And maybe perhaps get some legislation down the road, you know, get some other folks. You know, Janice Simulski is doing great with Billy's Law, like we heard at the beginning of the show. She's out there, and if we don't get behind that, that legislation's not going to pass, and that's part of the problem. And it's about a voice. Again, I don't want you all to listen. All of us have been doing this a lot of years combined. What is it, 150, Vito?
Yeah, something like that. 100, I think, on your part.
Most
okay,
of
and I'm the baby
end.
In the group. I'm the baby in the group. But
well,
combined our experience in these cases is tremendous.
We better wrap up here, too. We got about 30 seconds, I think.
Yes, sir. Thank
guys,
everybody
thank you
for
all so much for listening to the three cases from Garvin County. It was very, very blessing for us to be able to get this out.
This is only the tip of the iceberg. Thank you to our CrimeWire team. No, thank you, Susan. We'll be in touch. Our research producer, Kim Colton, public relations team at imaginepublicity.com. Our next show will be next week. I didn't write the date down. I'm sorry, but it's next Tuesday at 9 p.m. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases, crimes that interrupt and wreak havoc on families looking for answers, seeking justice.
Thank you for joining us tonight on CrimeWire. We always welcome your support and value you as our guest. If you'd like your case to be featured on CrimeWire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. And you can hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show at www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer and the show will automatically play. And please visit our website. We got some cases pending up there. We'd like to get some comments and feedback. So when you're browsing or surfing the net, stop in at the CrimeWire site and give us some feedback, and we'd appreciate it.
Well, good night, and God bless from the CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., Denny Griffith, Susan Murphy Milano, and Delilah and Kim. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, all.